So today I'm introducing a new radio segment that I call Good or Bad. And in other words, I'll be bringing up topics which some say people, which some say cause health, and others say it may be harmful. So is it good or is it bad? My first topic that I'm going to talk about is distilled water. And this is something that I get questioned about a lot from my patients. Now, many people are resorting to distilled water to avoid drinking tap water, and without having to invest in a very expensive water filtration system in their home. We know tap water isn't really drinkable, since tap water in most community water systems nationwide have been shown to contain hormones from birth control medications, high blood pressure medicines, toxic metals, even antidepressants. So obviously I don't recommend drinking tap water or even bathing in it. It'd be good to have a shower filter or a bath filter also. But distilled water is a very reasonable substitute because it's just pure water. Many of my patients have asked me if distilled water is something that robs minerals out of their bodies, though. And should distilled water be avoided to prevent mineral loss? The truth is water, and pure water is an obviously important daily substance needed to maintain our health. So remember that rainwater is distilled water, and our ancient ancestors collected rainwater to drink and use it in daily living. And when you think about it, do you really want your water to contain all your essential minerals that you need on a daily basis? No, I mean, if water contained all the essential minerals you need, it would probably look like mud. So you should be getting minerals out of your vegetables, which are preferably organic and usually contain far more minerals in them than conventionally grown vegetables. So that's the best place to get your minerals rather than your water. Water should be taken in as a separate nutrient, and whether it's distilled, filtered, alkaline water, rainwater, or whatever, you need the purest water possible. Now, for the athletes out there, I usually recommend your water be taken in with minerals then, because you can lose quite a bit of essential minerals in your sweat as you exercise. So I recommend my athletic patients take the World Health Organization solution for hydration, which has been shown to be as effective as IV therapy in rehydrating people, even with severe diarrhea in countries dealing with malaria and dysentery. I drink this solution myself when I'm playing basketball, and I feel like I'm able to keep going and going longer than my 40-year-old teammates. What's in the recipe for this solution? Check out the website rehydrate.org. And they give you the full outline of what the ingredients are. And like I say, I find it quite effective, especially when you're exercising. I usually add a little bit of lemon juice to help alkalinize my tissues during exercise so the lactic acid doesn't build up also. Now back to distilled water. One thing you need to know about distilled water is that unless you're distilling it yourself, it likely comes in plastic containers from the grocery store that may contain BPA, bisphenol A, it's called, which is considered a xenoestrogen and can act as a hormone disruptor in both men and women. BPA has been banned in baby bottles, but BPA is still found in some plastics and has been shown to cause obesity, bind to thyroid hormones, create anxiety and depression in adults, and even hyperactivity in children. At least one study has shown BPA suppresses DNA methylation, causing genetic changes and possibly leading to breast cancer, prostate cancer, or neuroblastomas. Bottom line is, don't worry about getting minerals out of your water. Get them out of your vegetables. Even the Journal of Internal Medicine notes, and I quote, "Since distilled water is devoid of minerals, mineral intake through diet is needed to maintain good health." And remember, the more athletic you are, the more minerals are needed for optimal health maintenance. Now, the second topic I want to talk about is baby aspirin. Is it good for us or bad for us? This turns out to be a surprisingly complex issue, and there's not a clear consensus among many medical experts, even the cardiovascular and cancer physicians. We all know aspirin is a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug that suppresses the normal functioning of platelets, making them less sticky. And this causes less clotting within the bloodstream. For this reason, it is often given to people with high risk of heart attack or ischemic stroke. It is also given to children and adults, of course, for pain and fever, and can be quite effective over the short term for this. But taking a low-dose aspirin, you know, typically 81 milligrams, every single day can create more problems than it's worth. In 2016, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force published a systematic evidence review on aspirin use in adults. It included research on cardiovascular disease, cancer, all-cause mortality, and also the potential risk of taking aspirin. They studied over 4,300 research abstracts and 336 research articles. Now, some people take aspirin for cancer prevention, especially colon cancer, but here's the thing. They found a quite insignificant 0.14 fewer cancer deaths per 1,000 people. In other words, one person in 7,000 people with cancer survived their cancer by taking aspirin. For cardiovascular disease prevention, it was shown that there was only one less death per 2,000 people. They also found that there is no clear mortality benefit from taking low-dose aspirin. They found rates of serious bleeding were actually higher than was previously reported in other trials for aspirin use. They found your risk of bleeding depends on many other risk factors, including your gender, whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or other cardiovascular risks. According to the journal Internal Medicine News, dated April 2016, for those taking any dose of aspirin, major gastrointestinal bleeding increases by 58%, and hemorrhagic bleeding anywhere in the body increases by 25%. Adding all these statistics together, any dose of aspirin should only be taken for short periods, for days to week at a time only. As an alternative, now fish oil and especially alpha-linolenic acid has been shown to reduce risk of cardiovascular death and mortality by 20%, both as a primary and a secondary prevention. By secondary, I mean if you've already had a heart attack, then it's a good preventive for that also. Fish oil prevents heart attacks by 24% and sudden death due to cardiovascular disease by 30%. This makes it a very positive treatment to prevent further disease. There aren't many drugs, if any, that are safe to use for years at a time, and aspirin should be considered too risky at any dose to take long term. And then lastly, I'd like to talk about something called forest bathing. Have you heard of this? Totally surrounding yourself in trees and green without the sounds of the city or any concrete to walk on. What do you think? Is forest bathing good for us, or is it just another walk in the woods? Well, there's some very interesting research on this. As a control group, they sent some people to the city streets, and other people spent time in the deep forest. The ones in the deep forest showed all kinds of benefits. One study of middle-aged men who walked 80 minutes in the morning and in the afternoon showed reduced pulse rate, increased scores for, quote, vigor, not sure how they measure that, and they showed decreased scores for depression, fatigue, anxiety, and mental confusion. Urinary dopamine was also lower compared to men who were checked during urban walking, suggesting a more relaxing effect. Another study of elderly patients with chronic heart failure, after a four-day forest bathing trip, they showed significant reductions in serum biomarkers for heart failure, which also reduced inflammatory markers and oxidative stress. And a second four-day trip a month later showed even more of the same benefit. So it actually accumulates in your body. Different mood profiles after forest bathing show less tension, anxiety, anger, hostility, fatigue, depression, and mental confusion scores. Also, blood pressure improved significantly. In chronic emphysema patients, forest bathing caused decreases in markers of inflammatory cytokines and also stress hormones. So get out there and bathe in the woods as much as you can. It looks like there's really no bad side to forest bathing. Of course, unless you get stung by a bee or you see a bear, or the worst is forgetting to pack your lunch. Okay, that's it for this segment. So if you'd like me to address something that you've always wondered about for a long time, is it good for me or is it bad for me? Let me know the topic by calling the Tahoma Clinic at 206-812-9988, and you can leave me a message. I will try to present it on the air the next time I'm sitting in for Dr. Wright. That number again is 206-812-9988. Thanks so much. I appreciate that.